This is Trackside with Kurt Cavan and Kevin Lee.
The Indianapolis 500, the Everest of racing. A quest worthy of the best drivers in history, and one that feeds an insatiable desire to win at the Brickyard. Since 1911, speed has been the holy grail here. Every May, they come to ride that razor-thin line between catastrophe and victory. History here echoes off the grandstands.
Johnny Rutherford, Viva, AJ
Foyt, and flows through everyone who gets behind the wheel. And despite the worldwide acclaim, the singular goal remains. Every driver wants it. One will taste it. Welcome to the only time and place where speed and desire culminate in immortality. Welcome to the Indianapolis 500. It is time.
Welcome to Trackside, 1070 The Fan, WFNI Indianapolis from our studios on Monument Circle. I'm Kevin Lee. This week, practice begins for the 96th running of the Indianapolis 500, along with Kurt Cavan of the Indianapolis Star. I'm Kevin Lee. David Deering is our studio producer tonight. Matt Hicks is our associate producer. The open we heard today, again, courtesy of just a little search on YouTube, was the 2006 ABC introduction edited to take out the things that were only 2006 specific. If you'd like to hear the whole one, just search 2006 Indy 500 intro and you will find it quite quickly. Who was the voice we heard, Kurt? You're writing your story. You're not listening to the show anyway. So well, you don't know, do you?
We didn't play the overhead.
It was on the overhead, just not very loud. Kiefer Sutherland.
There you go.
Kiefer Sutherland for everyone out there. All right. All right. We appreciate people releasing news on the day that we have a show, but enough already. Let's space it out a little bit. We're on every day this week, and we've only got an hour tonight. So we'll start with this, and then there was one, maybe two, from Lotus. The Indianapolis Star, I believe, and you, Kurt Cavan, were the first to report that Dragon Racing was going to separate from Lotus, if they had any say in it, that they had filed a breach of contract suit against Lotus. I believe the actual wording was contractual fraud in the motion that was filed, and what else? Tell me the story.
I'd like a lawyer to tell me what contractual fraud is. I think that's... It's a phrase I don't hear a lot of.
Well, I think it's pretty simple. You didn't hold up to your end of the bargain in the contract. So, although it's a little stronger than that.
It is.
Yeah.
Anyway, this story is about 3 months in the making because Jay Penske has been working to sever his contract even before Dreyer and Reinbold and Brian Herta Autosport, as best I can tell. I don't have a specific timeline on when everybody went to the pay window and tried to collect their contract back from Lotus, but it's at least 3 months in the works for Jay Penske's team. And while Jay himself has not made a public comment, the lawsuit that he is or the paperwork he has filed in Los Angeles certainly speaks on his behalf that he wants out of the deal, and he wants out of the deal now, and he's severing the relationship, which leads us to the next part of the story. If he's not powered by Lotus, what is he powered by?
Well, his dad happens to have pretty good ties with Chevy and owns Ilmor, who's actually producing that engine for Chevy.
Well, it's not a case of hey, Dad, can you loan me an engine? But it's pretty much as you suggest. It was, I think it's fair to say that, you know, when he needs two engines and Chevrolet is only offering one engine as part of their package, the phone call to Dad makes it happen pretty quickly, and I think that's how they'll get their second engine. But, you know, I kind of wondered why Jay Penske wasn't a Chevrolet engine all along.
That's what I was thinking today. Yeah. Well, I assume they were getting something from Lotus,
cars,
and they were all under the hope that they would have a chance to be competitive. They didn't know that they were going to not totally stop, but significantly slow down their progress during a month or two of limbo, and I'm not sure that limbo has ever actually ended, but apparently January, February was a very slow time for development because of the financial issues of the parent companies.
So Jay Penske begins the process of working through contract details with Chevrolet, and let's see, the third element, I guess, is how quickly can they get things signed and sealed and engines delivered and moving forward, and you wonder if they'll do some kind of a package alliance as Dreyer Reinbold is doing with Panther Racing, which was finally confirmed today. You know, can the Lotus team become a Chevy team by itself very quickly? And my guess is they probably will do it mostly by themselves, but I wouldn't be surprised if there's some kind of alliance to help the transition, as we know. As we talked about this last week in with the story regarding Dreyer Reinbold and Panther, that there's equipment changeover. You don't just say, I'd like to put a Chevy in a Lotus car and have it go as seamlessly as you'd expect.
Do you have some of the quotes from this lawsuit?
No, not in front of me.
I have some in front of me from the Associated Press story. It says, Dragon Racing has sued Lotus for at least $4.6 million in damages, accusing the engine manufacturer of damaging its reputation by spreading, quote, especially outrageous falsehoods about the team while failing to deliver two chassis. So again, there's one reason why they agreed. And hurting its ability to be competitive. Here is a statement from the lawsuit. Put simply, Dragon has had enough of Lotus's deceit and wrongdoing. Dragon has put an end to its ill-fated relationship with Lotus and now seeks recompense for the damages inflicted upon it. I think there are some even better ones. Lotus even admitted it was indebted to Dragon. Lotus's demands for payment were outrageous in this context, the suit says. Ultimately, Dragon was forced to relent to Lotus's outrageous and improper demands. The suit claims Dragon paid Lotus $200,000 in March toward the engine lease and paid $300,000 to a third-party vendor at Lotus's request. Lotus continued to insist on further payments, but Penske refused. Remember at the test at Sebring when their car sitting there without an engine, and it was inferred, well, they don't have an engine because they haven't paid their bills. That was basically the leaked story at that point, and Dragon Racing is saying they actually owed us money at that time, about $1 million, but they demanded if we were going to participate that we pay an extra $200,000 to them, $300,000 to a third party as well. Dragon also accused Lotus of defamation with, quote, knowingly false statements to the effect that Dragon was not honoring financial and contractual commitments to Lotus.
In the interest of fairness, this is one side of the story.
It is. And the AP also had a quote from Claudio Barrow this is from Auto Week, saying that Lotus will have an internal meeting to analyze the situation tomorrow.
Well, today was an off day in banking.
Yeah, that's right. It was a holiday.
It was a holiday in London.
That's one of the questions. There's so many questions of this. Is Lotus going to be a part of the 500? That's probably pretty important. Will they finish the season? There are two parts to that. Will they be in the 500? Will they finish the season?
Can't answer either one of them at this point. My guess is they will participate in the 500. They have two cars, or one and a half, I guess, at this point. You have the one car we know of HVM Racing, Simona DiSilvestro. Boy, that has to feel like a lonely spot in the island.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second one is the news that we'll get to next about Jean Alesi and having Lotus marketing money behind him to run with Theis Carlson's team, Indy Lights program, moving up to IndyCar, and FanForce United. I always have to think what the three words to that race team is, what those three are.
And they've got quality people. Greg Beck is involved. Also,
Tim Wardrop,
who was Ari Leyendijk's engineer on at least one, if not both, of his 500 winners. He's been around a long time. They've got some other
Mike Colliver.
Yeah,
another good name.
They've apparently only got about 8 full time employees, but it's a solid group. But no matter how solid you are, if you don't have the horses pushing you, and you've got a guy that hasn't been in a car in 11 years in an open wheel car, it's going to be challenging. I mean, this is no disrespect, because maybe he comes in and he picks this up immediately, but I will admit there's part of me wondering if other teams have fears about John Alesi's ability and stability and safety on the racetrack. Are they thinking in the back of their mind, we're going to put another car in there and get him out of this race? It's happened before when someone has decided they didn't want this particular driver in the race and they bumped him.
Well, it probably needs to start sooner than that, and that can start with IndyCar itself. Now, does IndyCar think this is a good idea? And I know there are several people in the paddock who question the ability of this program to work. Now, having said that, those were the concerns before they knew who was involved behind the scenes. You know, that Tim Wardrop, that Greg Beck, that Mike Colliver were involved, and mm-hmm. that certainly helps. I don't expect they'll try to do anything crazy with the setup. They're going to work him into it, and we'll see. I mean, but this isn't like, you know, and I get this question a lot from people, this is not like rolling out a car on Sunday afternoon to participate in the Indy 500. This is not that environment right now. We are in an engine lease program. Getting him out of the Indy 500 isn't quite as easy as just, you know, Foyt deciding he's going to run a third car.
It is if they can get an engine. It is for any Chevy or Honda team. If they want to bump him, they can. And I'm reluctant to bring this up because it's not fair to John Alesi, who is...
He's
a race winner.
You're assuming he's slower than Simone DiSilvestro.
Well, that's true, too. That's true.
And that's a regular car.
And it's, like I said, it's not fair... It's talk radio. We throw things out there.
I know.
Because very well, he might pick this up. He was a good race car driver.
Absolutely.
He was in Formula One for more than a decade.
Known for his bad luck, not his poor results.
Won a race. Drove for Ferrari. They don't let anybody drive for Ferrari. He's been out of the car for a while, but he has been in other types of cars. And he's prepared as much as you can, apparently, without actually getting test time with the simulator and things, but that's not the same thing. I'm just saying I'm sure this is a concern that other people have. Maybe on Thursday he gets in there, looks great, feels great, and moves it along, and hopefully this is not an issue. But it's something to watch as the week moves forward.
Well, look, I've got all kinds of concerns about it. Not so much with the people behind the scenes that we've talked about, but again, with his lack of experience, knowing that the Lotus is going to be slow, knowing that this is a team that has not been running an IndyCar. But having said that, I'm willing to give him a chance. Let's see how it goes. Give it a couple days.
Agreed.
And look, I mean, the reality is that the Lotus, what we don't really know yet is how fast the Lotus is on its own.
Yeah.
And can the Lotus even maintain a speed that's acceptable to IndyCar? This would be a different story if there were 35 or 36 or 37 cars. I only count 33, and you make the suggestion that Chevy could just roll out another one. They've already said they were going to cap at 15, and that's before Jay Penske came to them
I understand they just can't do it. It would be up to Chevy if they wanted to do it and felt like they had an engine. And like we said the other day, I think some of that would have to do with how many engines do they lose in practice? If everything goes well in practice and they don't lose many and have a surplus, by the time we get to Fast Friday, they might decide for the betterment of the event with some prodding from others. I think that's what it would take as well, saying we need to do this. Now, hopefully that doesn't come to it. Now, what are our numbers at this point? Because we were at 15 Honda, 14 Chevy, with that 15th out there lurking that we thought belonged to Ed Carpenter. And Ed, by the way, is going to join us in about 15 minutes, so we can ask him one of those questions. The real reason to talk to Ed was he tested at Texas Motor Speedway today, so we want to get his thoughts on that. So it's at 14, plus adding two Dragons. Is Ed giving up his engine, and we're just finding one more somewhere else?
Yes. It's going to be the 15th engine from Chevrolet will be the one that Ed had essentially been given, or at least allowed to work toward, mm-hmm. which if you add the 16th one gives us for the second for Jay Penske's team, gives us 16 Chevrolets and 15 Hondas and two Lotuses, assuming everything comes together.
More Lodi, I'm not sure.
Then you've got 33, and I don't see how Jay Howard's program, they've been talking about a deal, I don't see how it could be anything regarding Honda or Chevrolet. The only option then left for Jay Howard would be a Lotus, and I just don't see anybody else out there unless for some reason HVM wants to try to run a second car.
But why would they do that and run the risk of bumping their primary driver?
Exactly. I see no incentive for them at all. They need to focus on the car that they have. And at this point, you know, you don't have to outrun the Tiger. You have to outrun the other Lotus in this case. Because, you know, in the scenario of being chased by the Tiger, if he reaches you before he reaches me, I'm good. And and HVM car just needs to be quicker than Jean Alesi if the scenario that you provide comes true where somebody wants to bump Jean out of the race.
A few tweets. I'll roll through as many as I can. At Kevin Lee 23 from Edmund Hirschberger. So certainly this means that Lotus doesn't see the end of the season, right? Well, we don't know.
I'd be surprised.
Yeah, they're going to need to have better performance than what we're expecting, I think, this month.
And that's a lot to ask.
Yeah, and if they're dog slow and 10 miles an hour slower down the straightaway, and then everyone loses interest in their program, then
June 1st is the expiration date on this. That's what I think.
And I'm not even sure that, you know, we know that in June they have the opportunity to make some changes to the engines to try to make them more equal, but just giving them more horsepower is not the be-all, end-all. It takes more than that. It takes time, takes testing, and they just haven't done the testing.
Yeah, it won't be from having too many competitors and not enough engines. They'll at least have enough engines for the one competitor they have, but
yeah, that's I don't think you can really say this is the silver lining, but I suppose it's the spin you can use is that, well, they don't have to worry about a short of engines, so they can take off the limiter. I don't know what the phrase is, but they have really been limiting the boost and the RPMs at a very conservative path to not risk blowing that engine. They can maybe now amp it up a little bit because they should have plenty of engines.
In the poker terminology, they're the short stack, and they're going all in because you're out of options at this point. You've got to run as well as you can with the one car that you have for the season, and you're going to have to giddy up on it. And it's not an optimistic, feel-good situation at the moment.
All right, let's go through some more tweets, and we'll get to some other news and talk to Ed Carpenter coming up in just a little bit. At Kevin Lee 23 is the Twitter account. Kevin at 1070thefan.com as well. Hoggy 4 says, I have to ask, why is Chevy getting penalized all the time and Lotus isn't for not being up to specs?
Because if they penalize Lotus anymore, they're going to essentially push them out of the sport.
Well, he's asking
why is
Chevy getting penalized? I don't think Chevy is getting penalized. I'm missing something.
Well, I think I don't know what the Chevy being penalized part has to do with Lotus, but I think he's talking about the 10 spots at Long Beach.
Oh, okay.
You know,
well, the Hondas have had 10 spot penalties as well. Just not as many of them, and they didn't all change in mass.
The essence of the question is, why is the Lotus not taking any penalties for not meeting the expectations that they signed up for? And the reality is, if you punish them, they're done.
Yeah, they're done. And they may be done anyway. Alan Olinger, Auto Racing Cheer, says, the disparagement of Alesi is getting old. Why not wait until the rookie test before lambasting the guy? And I understand that. That's a fair point, and that's what I was trying to say along those lines, but I'm just saying what people are thinking. And it's not a fair thought. I admit that. It's not a fair thought. We will find out.
Well, and as we've talked about on this show for the last couple weeks, we've been extremely concerned about Catherine Legg's situation with a Lotus. Now, if Jean Alesi was coming into this with a Chevrolet, we might feel differently about it.
Yeah.
But we were talking about an inexperienced team. This is not the Jay Penske team that they ran Ryan Briscoe with a few years ago when they first came in to the Speedway. This is a basically a reconfigured team with an underpowered Lotus engine and a driver who's not only not had IndyCar experience, not had Indianapolis 500 experience, you know, not even had oval track experience, well, and hasn't raced in 11 years.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
So we had concerns even for Catherine. This takes it a step further, you know. So it's, yeah, we're willing to give him the chance, and I think the lineup that Theis Carlson's team has gives him about as good a chance as he could hope for. But this Lotus is going to be slow, and when you try to do more with less, bad things tend to happen at the Speedway.
Deke 15 says the fraud comes because Dragon claims Lotus fraudulently represented themselves to cause the contract.
Okay.
Lots of comments, but no.
Save a couple seconds here for testing times at Texas before we get to Ed Carpenter too.
Go ahead. Well, I'm looking for the next question.
That's what I was typing up.
I've got it here.
Scott
somewhere.
Dixon ran 212.3, which I said in a tweet earlier was not apples and apples, but they ran 215 in qualifying. But here's the thing, as I delve deeper into the times, you only had one other car at least 211 miles per hour, about four of them at 210, and everybody else was in 20 single digits, 205 with being the low for Kanaan, all the way up to 209 as the best time for Castroneves. So you've got a pretty low set of, it's just a test, I'll give you that, but speeds are definitely down, and they're down about 5-6 miles per hour at Texas.
Not surprising, though, because they were down 5-7 miles an hour at Indianapolis.
Well, it's just trying to project what things are going to look like when we get to Indianapolis, and Ed Carpenter today was fifth of the 12 cars, really fifth of the 11, because Barrichello is in the group, and I'm sure that limited Barrichello's time on the track, probably limited Kanaan's running to some degree too. Although I think one of the disappointments of the season so far is KV as a whole. We've not seen anything to speak of out of Kanaan this season. Maybe this is really the year he wins the Indy 500 because he's not had the results and the speed you'd expect during the first four races of the IndyCar season.
Okay, there's Brandon's question answered at Haggy 500, times and speeds from Texas today. Off topic, at Jams Oil says, XM94 is on 24 hours. When started, we had programs. Why no programs besides qualifications in the race? Should have old races, trackside, more front wing podcasts. This has been discussed, and it's been discussed with me, but the issue is that costs money, and at this point, XM Sirius doesn't have any money. They merged together. I think it was more likely to happen when they were two separate competing entities, but now they have no competition for satellite radio, and they have paid a boatload to Howard Stern and Oprah Winfrey and NASCAR and Major League Baseball. And one of the things I've been hearing, not from anyone in either of these companies or one company now, is that these professional sports leagues that receive such huge rights fees the last time around should not expect them the next time around.
Wow.
And they may get something, but it may be simply, if you want your games on satellite radio, you're going to deal with us, and we're going to get a better deal because we're not making money. And if you don't, then you can go ahead and stream them on the internet, and until everyone has internet in their car, people just won't be able to hear your games. So that's the biggest issue right now, is that there just is not any funding for that. We've talked about it. And even putting our show on that channel and nothing else, I don't know that really helps it, because you'd still have to, it's not as simple as just giving them our show. One, there would be no incentive for this radio station to give their show away. Two, you still have to pay someone to run the board, produce it, that kind of thing. And it's not as simple as just putting old races on, saying they're there. Somebody has to repackage those and do it. There's a lot of man hours involved in that, and we tried to figure some costs, and the costs add up pretty quickly. I think it'd be a matter of IndyCar funding it at this point, and if you're IndyCar, you're probably thinking, we could probably spend that money on marketing in other areas. I would love to see that happen at some point, but I think it really would come when they have enough advertising, when they know they have enough advertising to do something like that. So trust me, it has been considered, but I don't see it happening anytime in the next little while. We'll go through more tweets coming up in a bit at KevinLee23 and continue to run through the news of the day. Donald Davidson is here. He'll be taking your calls tonight at 8 o'clock on the Talk of Gasoline Alley. And we'll check in with Ed Carpenter coming up in just a moment. Stay with us. It's Trackside on 1070 The Fan.
I'm Ed Carpenter, and this is Trackside with Kurt Cavan and Kevin Lee on 1070 The Fan.
The Indianapolis Motor Speedway open for business this Saturday for all rookies and veteran refresher courses coming up on Thursday. You can watch from the grandstands on the south end around the Hall of Fame Museum. Thanks for staying with us with Kurt Cavan. I'm Kevin Lee. It's Trackside, 1070 The Fan. The driver of the number 20 for Ed Carpenter Racing and Fuzzy's Vodka, Ed Carpenter, joins us now. Are you still in Texas, Ed?
I am. About to pull into the rental car return, trying to catch my flight home. So hopefully there's not too much background noise.
We think you can multitask. Last year, we won a race where you were holding down your visor and steering with the other hand, right? So you can do it.
I'll do my best.
At 220, I think you can handle this. Well, how did the car feel?
I'm only going 60 now. So.
how was the car today? How did it feel at Texas Motor Speedway?
It wasn't bad. You know, it was really our first time out on the oval. The first test at Indy, we had some issues and really didn't get to do much. So, overall, I was happy with the first day. You know, it's definitely a little bit different beast. And, I think the whole aero package is still a little bit of a work in progress. Trying to figure out what we're going to run at Texas, but it wasn't bad.
Did people mostly run by themselves, or did they try to get you guys running close together to see what the aero was like, if there was going to be pack racing, if you could get around somebody and so forth?
Yeah, they tried to get us to run together earlier. Everyone was, took a while to get there. I wasn't really ever great in traffic. The Ganassi car seemed to be decent in traffic, but it was still a struggle. I think that, they were pressuring us to get in traffic before when we did. And, I was kind of making the comment, the fact that we weren't running in traffic kind of answered the question to what we were all thinking and feeling, just because it wasn't easy. We're spending a lot of energy trying to make sure we don't have pack racing, and I don't think it's really much of a concern, in my opinion.
Rubens Barrichello saw his first action on an oval today. Did you have a chance to see him? How did he look? Any comments from him?
I didn't talk to him, and I didn't run right around him, but he looked fine to me. He ran quite a bit. Tony ran a little bit in his car, but he's a professional. I don't think anybody thought he was going to have any real issues. So nothing stood out, which is a good thing.
His quote was something along the lines of, "When I first went over 200 miles an hour, I exclaimed something that wasn't very polite."
I'm sure it was. Texas is a different experience anyway, so I'm sure it was an eye-opener, and I'm sure it'll be the same when he gets out for ROP, or if he's, I think he's taking part in that, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so I'm sure, if Texas felt fast, Indy's going to feel ridiculous to him.
Are you confident everything is fine for this race? Did we learn enough today? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard. This car is a challenge, and, I think that's what everyone wants. At this point, I think we need to make sure that we're going to put on a good show. It's definitely hard to run in traffic, and we're not going to have pack racing from what I saw today. So I just want to make sure that we have enough downforce to still put on a good show.
So all ready to go. They don't need to... The only concern would be just making sure that the racing can still be entertaining, but from a safety standpoint, relatively speaking, it's as good as it can get?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're definitely going to have more separation than we've had in the past. I would have liked to have seen someone try the Indy Aero package today, because I think it may be a little better, but nobody tried it. They wanted to just keep evaluating what we have, so... I still think it'd be interesting to try it when we go back.
What do you expect the first couple days of, or maybe I would say Sunday through about Wednesday, what do you expect Indianapolis to be like? Do you expect a lot of people running? Do you expect a little bit of of protecting engines. What do you expect for the first few days?
I think people are going to run a lot just because there's still so much to learn with this new car that, you know, I think that we need all the track time that we can possibly get, you know, whether, you know, you just don't know what the weather is going to do. So I think if we can go run, you know, I'm going to be out there as much as we can, you know, up to a point, you know, if engine miles become an issue, that's, you know, we always have to work around that. But I want to be out there all we can, because with the old car, we, you know, we knew what we needed for the race and kind of knew where we'd end up, and you could spend a little more time on qualifying, you know, with the basically 1 week of practice. You know, we're all going to have to sort out an all-new race package, which I don't think any of us know what it is yet, and still work on fighting for the front row as well. So, you know, it's going to be a lot more activity, even though we have, you know, fewer cars than what we've had the past few years.
Ed Carpenter is joining us, the only owner-driver in the Izod IndyCar Series with the Fuzzies ultra-premium vodka team. It had been reported that you had a hold on a second engine. Do you still have access to a second engine, or did that go back in the hopper today?
I don't know. You know, I've been focusing on what it's going to take to get the 20 car in victory lane at IMS, and that's been my focus. You know, I think now that it's looking like there's 33, I think it takes even more pressure off of us to consider running a second car, just because, you know, we want to go compete for a win in Indianapolis, and I think at this point our best chances of doing that are as a one car team.
So you'd prefer not to mess with it?
Yeah, I think, you know, we're a new team, and to take on that much, you know, I think that it's not going to help our chances at this point. You know, we do want to grow, but it just was all coming together too late. You know, it was really, you know, we all care so much about Indy and wanted to make sure we did what we could do to help see that there were 33. But now that it's looking every day like that there will be 33, you know, I'm not really, I haven't even asked if that engine's still there.
Yeah, I would think that makes sense. Maybe the scenario could have been if you merged with another team, a team that has, you know, I'm just throwing out a name. I don't think they wanted to do it this way. But if Newman Haas wanted to bring their people and badge it as a second car for Ed Carpenter, something like that where you didn't have to send some of your people over might have made more sense?
You know, it's even things like that, you know, are complicated to put together, you know, just going into Indy. So, you know, we've got a good group going, and we're just going to keep focusing on our work and, you know, do the best job we can. And, you know, if we do that, I think we'll be in contention.
I want to ask you about the road and street courses. You appear to be making good progress. The great result hasn't come, but you had a really nice run going at Brazil until late in the race. Do you feel like you've made good progress in that area this year?
I think so. You know, I've been, not that I haven't in the past, but, you know, we've been putting a lot of effort and energy into improving. And, you know, like you said, we're not really proud of the results that we've achieved up to this point, but, you know, we feel like we've had better showings than what we've had results. So, you know, we feel like, you know, I wasn't really happy with how Barber went, but as far as Long Beach and Brazil, you know, I felt like we're closing the gap and, you know, on pace and racing people. And, you know, I had a great time in Brazil. I wish we could have just closed it out and had a strong finish.
I want to bring it back to Indianapolis. What should we expect from Brian Clausen this next week?
Well, you know, I think Brian's he's a great driver, and he's, you know, knowing that team really well and their engineer there. You know, I think he's got a great opportunity, and I think they'll have fast cars. And, you know, I think he can, as long as he has a smooth month and plays it smart, you know, I think he could surprise a lot of people.
Ed Carpenter's the driver of the number 20 Fuzzies Ultra Premium Vodka Chevrolet for Ed Carpenter Racing. Get the rental turned back in safely. Come home safely tonight. We'll see you out at the track this weekend.
Sounds good. I'll be there.
All right. Thank you, Ed.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
An opportunity now to...
You think he's excited?
He's got to be excited.
He's got to be excited. He's got a shot. And I told him a couple weeks ago when he was talking about this second car, I said, you need to focus on winning this race. You realistically are in the conversation with a Chevrolet at this point. And he said, that's kind of been my thought. He said, that's why I really don't want to do a second car.
So you're a consultant now. I like that.
Why? Well, it just seems smart. I mean, I think
it does. It does.
I think people, and this is the discussion we've had about Chevrolet and Honda thinking about this last car in the field or having a 34th car for bumping. In a competitive environment, you need to focus on the front. If you've got a chance to win the race, Chevy and Honda need to think about winning the race. What does it take to win the race? And that's where a lot of these teams, and I've seen it time and time again with big race teams that try to be a little bigger at Indianapolis and dilute the product they have. And Ed, you know, and I've said it to other people over the years, it was not like a great secret or inside information, but just focus on what you got and what you're good at. Don't try to be something you're not. And right now, Ed Carpenter Racing is not a two-car team. Go look at who they've got and the manpower and the infrastructure, and they're not ready to be a two-car team in Indianapolis just yet when they have a chance to at least contend for a win.
Here was the quote from Rubens Barrichello, courtesy of IndyCar today. It's different from anything I've tried on my second run after I broke the 200s. I was very rude on the radio because I was so excited. I said it was truly awesome, but not in a good manner. Expletive deleted.
Yeah.
Coming up in just a moment, a special opportunity for you to get in a Silver Crown two-seater ride at the Indiana State Fairgrounds coming up on Wednesday afternoon to ride with either Jack Hewitt or Brian Clausen. So stay tuned. We'll give those away in just a moment. Some more IndyCar notes, Indianapolis 500 stories, and back to emails and tweets as well. This is Trackside on 1070 The Fan.
You're listening to Trackside with Kevin and Kevin on 1070 The Fan.
All right, obviously there's a little bit of racing in the state of Indiana throughout the month of May, not only at the world's greatest race course, but coming up on Friday, May 25th, that's Burger Bash night. So there's more to do. Coming up at the Indiana State Fairgrounds, USAC Silver Crown Cars with the 59th annual Hoosier 100 on the famous one-mile dirt oval at the Indiana State Fairgrounds. Practice starts at 5, Silver Crown qualifying at 6. The races begin at 8 o'clock, and Kenny Schrader is one of those that is entered in. And if you'd like ticket information, contact Ticketmaster, 1-800-745-3000, or do a Google search. You can find it. Track Enterprises also. trackenterprises.com. And coming up on Wednesday out at the fairgrounds, you can ride along with Jack Hewitt or Brian Clausen. I have 3 two-seater rides available in the USAC Silver Crown two-seater on the one-mile dirt track at the state fairgrounds. You need to be 21 or older, and you'll have to come into the station here to sign the waiver. So you need to be available to come in here either tomorrow or Wednesday morning and be available Wednesday between noon and 3. So callers 1, 2, and 3. First three that are interested, 239-1070. We'll have the opportunity to do this. So please don't call if you're not actually going to use it. It's Wednesday between noon and 3 at the Indiana State Fairgrounds, and you need to get in here to Emmis downtown on the Circle tomorrow during business hours, preferably, and possibly on Wednesday morning as well. So David will take care of that while Kurt and I continue to chat.
I like it. And I like how you go to the tweet deck and pull up questions, interactions.
We like that. Makes it easier when we're actually here in this studio and there's no Pacer game tonight. Makes things much more simple. Now, issue is when you refresh, and it takes a little while on our Commodore 64 here sometimes. A lot of people just with notes that they're listening. We greatly appreciate that. That's our marketing arm right there. We have no budget, as you know, to market the show, so we appreciate the people online and through Twitter that do the marketing. Paul Dalby mentions that he listens via TuneIn radio app as well. And there's the iPhone app. Mish Beer mentions that she listens on there as well. IndyCar Chad says, how great would it be to see Ed drink the milk? Looked strong the last two ovals, one at Kentucky, qualified third at Vegas.
Well, he's qualified really well here at Indianapolis the last 2 years, mm-hmm. in the top nine, the fast nine both years. I think he qualified eighth both times. So you know, he was in the hunt, and that's a great starting spot. I wouldn't put him in my first three or four, but I certainly would have trouble leaving him off the maybe the 10 people that I think have a realistic shot to win this race.
You know, the fun thing is that we really just don't know a lot. Is Chevy going to have an advantage over Honda? Is Honda going to have an advantage? We're going to start to learn some things, and only start because you never know if somebody's going to be sandbagging for a couple of days or who's getting a tow, who's not getting a tow. So, yes, it'd be great to see 230s and talk about new track record. We're not going to have that this year, but there are still things that I will be interested in. Maybe some will not, but I think most of us that are 500 fans are still going to find plenty to be interested in. We'll get later on in the month talking about potential winners. I always like to kind of categorize, you know, our top level, which I think this year, you know, is going to go more like to 7 or 8. Then there's going to be another tier of people that won't surprise us. That's going to be maybe another 7 or 8, and then you get into long shots and things like that.
Yeah, the when we've talked about it's just a number, that usually refers to the car count. We joke about that, that famous quote that was uttered. But in this case, you know, the speed, let's hopefully by the time Saturday comes, we're not really in a big discussion of is it 216 or is it, you know, 9 miles an hour off last year's pole speed. Let's try to enjoy the competition between the drivers and between the manufacturers, because I think that's going to be really dramatic to watch the Hondas versus the Chevys. And some days you're gonna think you know where things stand and which drivers are hot and which ones aren't. And then, you know, how does Lotus factor into all this? So the speed relative to years past really probably shouldn't be the issue this year, because we know it's going to be down.
Steve Wittich mentions John Alesi came in second in the GT2 class in the European Le Mans Series in 2010. Okay. A lot of conversation about Ed's second engine, and I should have looked before, but S.E. Jarzo said, better ask Ed if he's really giving up that second engine lease. I think not. I don't know if it's his to sell.
I don't think it is either. This is not his.
Yeah, it's not like a car. I think he just had a hold on it, and then at some point they're going to say, are you going to use it? No? Okay, then it's ours, Chevy's. And then they don't have to give it to someone else. They could say, we're going to pocket it and not deal with it. But that's my understanding, and that's yours as well?
Yeah, and he also made reference to any kind of an alliance with his team, and that causes some distractions and some effort, and really is not as easy as just hooking up a couple teams to work together as Dryan Reinbold and Panther have. They've gone to a lot of effort to make this happen, and with some leader circle issues to work through and contractual things to work through. You know, it's not like Jay Penske's team is just going to move into Ed Carpenter Racing and put together a second team or a third team or make it a one big happy family. It's going to be two organizations working separately. There may be some assistance, but Ed's going to focus on his deal.
Mish Beer at What I'm Thinking says, this is not the year to be introducing a potential moving chicane, a Lacy Lotus, to the field. Too many unknown variables already.
Well, there is, but, I mean, we don't know. It may be Simona being the slowest one. I mean, it's going to be one of the two Lotuses. I think we're fairly confident about that. But I'm not ready to say John Lacy can't do this. I just have, as you go into this, that would be one that would put up a flag, and for good reason, given the reasons we just stated. But he's been a very talented race car driver in the past. So
I know her sentiment and her thought is shared by quite a few people. That's why I brought it up. But like I said, and others pointed out, it is not fair to say that until we've seen him. So we wait and we see on that. At @jam_son, Jameson, if IMS plays recordings of Jim Neighbors, they should play recordings of Tony Holman giving the command. No one did it better. No one has done it better since. So again, they're just going to get rid of all of us. We're going to record the radio broadcast. They don't need any of us.
You've suggested that. That's not a good...
That's no good.
Unless you get the, you know, the rights to it, you can get some residuals.
Jordan Click says, thanks for the encouragement. Use the playlist for the race. We said Run Jordan Run or Go Jordan Go. He said, listen to music, but listen to the podcast on the cool down.
That was Friday. We gave him some encouragement.
Probably should have done that Thursday. I appreciate everyone that listens to the show. I would admit I probably need a little more than a talk show to run with, although I have used previous 500s before, and that works pretty well. What I think I'm going to do, I didn't get around to finding one I wanted to listen to this year. What I want to do, if I'm ever moronic enough to try to do this again, is I want to put like a montage of extended highlights, like the last 10 laps of 2006, the finish to 82, the finish to 92. You know, like
Bob Lamy yelling in your ear. That would be great.
Yeah. I could probably just, you know, go over to Bob's office and have him yell in my ear and record it and do something like that. But so
you should sync that going into turn four as you're running around the oval. You could have Chris Denari and Bob Lamy.
That's a long way around that track. I wish we had time to recap my mini, but there's so much news going on, we're not going to have time for that tonight. Jay, I can't pronounce your last name, John, but John, you know who you are. J-S-A-L-E-W-I-C-Z. Wonders why NASCAR allows pit reporters to wear street clothes, but in IndyCar, you guys wear fire suits, or is it a network thing?
What do you
It's somewhat of a network thing, but I also know this. I think it's a good idea to wear a fire suit when you're down there. And we don't have to wear one. It's not an IndyCar rule that we have to wear a fire suit. It is part safety, and it's part look. It's part look to show your pit reporters are in there, they're down there, involved. But
plus, you're a big billboard when you walk around.
That too, but some of it is safety. And I know a lot of people that are responsible for me, my superiors have said, we like the idea of you guys wearing fire suits from safety as well.
What did Doug Bowles send you a picture?
No, that was he's on the cover of a Hendricks County magazine.
Oh.
Yeah.
There you go. Hey,
big cover story.
I know you're scrolling through Indy 500 related things, but let's get to two Indy 500 drivers since it's Monday.
Okay.
And we just went through this Saturday nationwide race. What was your takeaway?
Well, I think we're going to need some time on this. I have this on the thing. On the docket, but we may need that for tomorrow. But we can touch on this because maybe the penalties will come out tomorrow as well. Danica Patrick punting Sam Hornish Jr. Sam says that a tire was going down.
Right.
And I love Danica's response that just talk to Sam Hornish. We are all good. He told me he had a flat right front, which explains both incidences. I think it might be a spelling issue there. I think that explains the first incident. How does that have to do with her hitting him? That's the second incident.
I think it's pretty clear what she did. She retaliated. So how do you feel about that?
I think she should be punished.
Harshly? Yes.
I think she should be parked. I know there is no way she is ever going to be parked. But if you're serious about this being a real sport and not entertainment, when someone intentionally crashes someone else, they sit. Chances of that happening are as good as me starting on the pole for the Indianapolis 500 this year.
Maybe a little less than that, but
NASCAR has already, Robin Pemberton has already been quoted as saying, we don't see any problem with this. There's not going to be any kind of penalty.
They had to be going still 160 miles per hour, and she sent him into the wall.
And here's the other thing. She called her shot. She has said on many occasions, one of the reasons I want to go to NASCAR is because you can pound on people, and if somebody does you wrong, I don't have the quote in front of me, but she has made it pretty clear that she likes the idea of being able to retaliate immediately in a stock car. Has she not said that?
Yeah, absolutely.
She called her shot. She did it. The same way a pitcher who admits after the game or says before the game, I'm going to hit you. If you hit him, you get penalized pretty significantly.
Today's announcement, Major League Baseball, is he gets 5-game
Cole
suspension.
Cole Hamels got 5 games because he admitted. Now, that's really not that big of a deal. That means they push his start back 1 game. So I think he knew that because 5 has usually been the precedent for intentionally hitting someone in the butt. But you know what? He loses 5 160 seconds of his salary.
Here's the thing. If you want to retaliate in some form, that's fine. You just can't use your race car to do it. It endangers the driver you're retaliating against, and it endangers the fans, potentially, depending on where it is on the track that it happens.
Mm-hmm.
People have done it on pit road, and that threatens the safety of the crew workers and the people who are on pit road. If she wants to get out of the out of a race car, helmet on or otherwise, and beat the tar out of him.
But that's not right either, as we saw before.
I'm just saying, if she wants to do it with her hands, that's different. And that's she can't do it with a race car.
That's an entirely different set of circumstances, because she's a 105-pound girl, and while I think she probably would be fine with a fist fight with someone, everyone knows that they can't shove a little girl.
What if the roles had been reversed and he would have put her in the fence?
He would have sat for multiple races.
Exactly.
And they're going to get tired of Danica through no fault of her own, mostly, pretty quickly anyways, with the way she overshadows and the way the media overshadows everyone else. This is not going to help her cause with something like this. Sam's probably not best buddies with everybody, but I would think he's somewhat respected at least.
Yeah.
This is a guy that's won the Indianapolis 500. He's now won a nationwide race. He's not chummy with anybody. He's a pretty serious guy, but I wouldn't think he has a whole lot of enemies. I would think Danica is on everybody's. Now, I'll be shocked if she ever does this again. I would think and hope she's learned her lesson. If not, then she needs to go away.
Well,
you just can't do it.
You can't do that.
Here's the quote. You know, she's going to have to meet with NASCAR next week. Good quote from Tony on Pop Off Valve on Twitter. Here's how that meeting's going to go when NASCAR calls Danica into the hauler, and I would tend to agree with this. Thanks for the ratings, kid. Go get them.
Yep. There you go.
And the audio of Tony Stewart I have, too, with his post-race press conference. I'm going to save that for tomorrow night. That was fabulous. All right, thanks to Ed Carpenter for joining us. We'll be back tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. Jump on board now. By the way, we have all our winners for the two-seater rides. Congratulations for that, for the USAC Silver Crown event Wednesday and the race coming up on Friday, the 25th, the Hoosier 100 at the Indiana State Fairgrounds.